Production. Recorded live.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Best Interest of the Family Radio. This is Dave Taylor, co-producer, and I'm joined by the other producer of our program, Best Interest of the Family, Larry, the parent coach, Heron. Good evening, Larry.
Well, hello, Dave, my co-producing co-host. How are you, sir?
And Larry, I have to put a big thanks out to you for Sunday, because Larry put on a barbecue for me in celebration of my 50th birthday. I can't believe I'm 50 years old. Most of the people around me that have known me for a few decades can't believe I'm 50 either.
That's a fact, Dave. I was just getting ready to say that. There's a few others in a basement.
My father and I were joking about it on my birthday. In fact, I just saw Mom pop up on the board. Hi, Mom. And I said, you know, you realize, Dad, that you and I both wonder how I made it past half this age. But nonetheless, I got a real thrill out of Sunday. And, you know, I got together, barbecued some burgers and some steaks and some sausages. And, man, it was a great time. It was great weather, great people dropping in, and the biggest highlight was when you were whispering in my daughter's ear, and the next thing I know, there's a cake coming out of the door, and she got the biggest thrill out of that, Larry. I could just, she was beaming from ear to ear.
She was excited to, she was excited to carry that cake to you, Dave, no question, and she's quite the little lady. Was spying on you when you didn't realize it to make sure you didn't walk in, as DJ and I put candles in that thing.
Right.
And I think some other people were surprised, too. Nobody but Becky and DJ and I knew that cake was coming.
Yeah. And the special message that you appeared
in
that cake, it was heartfelt.
Very unique. Very, very unique to my my articulating creative language, and hats off to the Orchard 10 Market there at 10 Mile Orchard Lake. I recommend them to everyone. If you want a creative birthday cake, go in there and buy something off the shelf, and they'll write just about anything you want them to write on it, because sure enough, that's what they did for you, Dave.
Yeah, those particular four-letter words that in black icing at that too. So we'll just keep the audience wondering about that. Maybe we'll put a picture of it up on the website.
Well, there you go. We have one. So that's all we need to do is just get it on the website.
Well, I again thank you, Larry. That was such a great time. And you're such a great friend and a great co-host, and I don't care what people say about you, you're still better than Dr. Phil, and you still got hair. So
I appreciate that, and you're welcome, Dave. It's a privilege, it truly is.
But Larry, I also got a real thrill, and it was a good time at the last Dads and Moms of Michigan meeting. The one that we did a prelude on the last program to the parental alienation seminar that you put on. You do a great job with that.
Well, thank you. You're kind. And we had a good turnout. It was, want to encourage everyone listening. Dads and Moms of Michigan is a phenomenal effort. And we've been meeting at various different places. I'm not sure what the next, I believe it's in Waterford.
Where
we're going to be meeting.
Eagles Club. I'm pulling up the website right now to make certain about date in October. And, of course, anybody can go to dadsofmichigan.org.
We guarantee you the utmost effort to put on presentations that are going to be educational and leave you inspired and energized, and if nothing else, walking out of the room with information that you didn't walk in with, and that's usable and that can be effective in your case and enlighten you in understanding. Our next presentation is going to be a legal roundtable, I believe, with Mr. Michael Thomas, who's on our board. I can assure you Mike's energy, Mike's knowledge and skill as a family law attorney will leave you with that type of information. He'll leave you with understanding of your rights and what you can expect in court, what you need to do, and what you need to watch out for, and, you know, what hiring an adequate and skilled attorney is about, all these various legal matters as it applies to family court, which is a whole nother animal. I mean, it truly is. A lot of times people think that they can just go in with any kind of an attorney, or an attorney said, well, hey, you know, I do some family law, and, you know, I do all this other stuff too. You'll learn very quickly, and hopefully not the hard way, because when you attend conferences like this, you learn that, in fact, lawyers are kind of like, well, kind of like your field, Dave, skilled tradesmen. You know, I know some very, very good plumbers that might do a little bit of tile work on the side. But if the primary job is tile, I want somebody who does at least 90% of that every day. And if the primary job is plumbing, I'm not going to hire a carpenter. You know, the bottom line is you want somebody who specializes in the primary job you're trying to do. When it comes to your family, you want somebody who understands family law, because it is different. It truly is. And you not only want somebody who understands family law, but you want somebody who works in your county, understands the type of evidence your judge wants to hear. And geez, Dave, I'm turning this into a whole separate program, but that's why we need to encourage people to come on out to this next conference and listen to Mike Thomas, and of course bring your questions, because he'll be available to answer them as well.
Yeah, and that free FREE seminar is on October the 2nd, 10 a.m. to noon, and that is at the Waterford Eagles Club. And again, go to dads and moms, because both parents matter, right? dadsandmomsofmichigan.org, and all the information is there. In fact, there should be a map if you just click on the address, and that'll tell you how to get to the Waterford Eagles Club. Now, the Eagles have been very cooperative, and we're very appreciative of their involvement in our organization, because they've got a number of venues throughout the state of Michigan. And, you know, the idea is that we're going to take advantage of as many of those venues and make our seminars available as widely and as broadly spread as we possibly can, you know, to get the word out. But, of course, Dads and Moms of Michigan's primary goal is to see that children do have equal access to both mom and dad, regardless of, you know, their marital or otherwise situation. And to, you know, to create, you know, needed court reform through educational aspects of the organization. And a lot of people may not know, Larry, as of course we know it, but there we have a new building, roughly half a mile from the Friend of the Court in Oakland County. And there's a huge 4x8 lit sign that says Dads and Moms of Michigan. This is a one-of-a-kind, first of its kind in the state of Michigan, you know, the parenting house. You know, we're going to be bringing needed educational programs and you know, needed, you know, movements toward reform and getting the current system involved in the process of respecting families in the state of Michigan.
Absolutely. It's a beautiful building, and I encourage people to check it out on the website. And hopefully soon, Dave, we'll get that that building open, and we'll have that that ribbon-cutting ceremony. And then that building is going to be fully operational, and we're going to be running some great things out of there. And looking forward to it. Very, very exciting times.
Well, I'll tell you what, our guest is Scott Dudek, and he's running for state rep. If you recall, Larry, we actually met him at the last Dads and Moms of Michigan free seminar.
Absolutely. Scott was there, and it was a pleasure to meet him. In fact, we were impressed enough about him that we invited him to come on the show.
Yeah, and do you realize that Scott is running under the Libertarian Party? This is the first Libertarian running for office that we've ever had on this program.
I was trying to think about that. We've had a few different politicians on, actually.
We've had
quite a few, and that's the first libertarian, though, huh?
Yeah, we've had those that are, you know, we're running, you know, like judges that don't run partisan. And we've had Republicans, and we've had a Democrat or two, but we have never had a libertarian. I like a lot of Scott's viewpoints. I've been to his website. You know, he stands for responsible government, and we'll let him speak to that. And I know that he's a shared parenting-minded guy. You know, he's been through the system. So he has a great appreciation for those that have had to utilize the friend of the court and you know, having to get in front of a judge on issues of their children and their family and their possessions. We'll bring on Scott here in a little bit, and we'll talk a little bit about his campaign and why he's a libertarian and why he's shared parenting minded and what are some of his goals for when he goes into the state house in Michigan.
That sounds good.
Well, I'll tell you what. Let's not delay any longer, I'll tell you what. Let's bring Scott. Scott, welcome to Best Interest of the Family Radio.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate the offer and the having me on this evening. It's a great thing. I truly do believe in, you know, the shared parenting, and yeah, I've been through it personally. I have a 3-year-old daughter, and I've been through the friend of the court system and have witnessed firsthand the inadequacies of it, I guess is the best way to describe it. I have a few other words, but it's inadequacies, I guess, is the best way to describe it.
That's keeping it politically safe for the moment. Scott, tell us why you're running for state rep.
Why I'm running for state rep? Well, there's a few reasons. First off is I hate government. Second off is I hate politicians. The third thing is I've got a 3-year-old daughter. She doesn't have the same chance of a future that I've had if somebody doesn't step up and change the course government is on. We've got a lot of ugliness going on in state level and in national level, both. And I've looked at the Democratic Party, I looked at the Republican Party, and I did not see anything consistent from either party. There's a lot of variations and a lot of lies that come out of both parties, and it really disturbed me, and that's why I chose to run as a libertarian. I feel that their values most closely match mine. There is a few differences I differ with within the party, but at a majority, you're not going to get everything with every party. Nobody's 100% happy with anything. But I do feel I'm most like a libertarian, and I just want to go up to Lansing and make a difference. I want to represent the people.
And in representing the people, now, I talked to you at Saturday meeting for Dads and Moms of Michigan, and you told me you've been to a number of doors. And obviously, if you're out there, you know, ringing doorbells and knocking on doors and kissing babies, you know, you're hearing the issues. So what are some of the issues in your district?
The issues are jobs. It's jobs in the economy. I mean, if we get jobs back, we'll have an economy. Right now, we've got a family leaving Michigan almost every 12 minutes is the last number that I could put together, you know, to put it in realization. A family leaving Michigan every 12 minutes. Now, I'm also an over-the-road truck driver. I'm currently sitting here in the middle of the valley in California, and I can see plates. You see a U-Haul with a car on the back of it. It's got Michigan plates on it. They're going to Texas. They're going to Tennessee. They're going to Florida. They're going out of the state. You see it all the time. You see Michigan plates leaving the state.
So you've got a bird's-eye view, literally, out there on the freeway, and you're looking at these license plates on these trailers and on these rental U-Hauls, and they say Michigan on them, huh?
Yes. And you can't blame people. If they've lost their job, they've lost their house, why would you stay in Michigan right now? There's no job.
Right.
We've got to get jobs back. I mean, that's the key to it. And the economy will come back once you start getting jobs back. But you can't bring jobs into a state with the taxes the way we are and the regulations the way we have it. You know, we are one of the most regulated states. In fact, there's only one state that's worse to move now, and that's New York.
And lay out some of your plan, if you would, as to how you would bring needed jobs and how you would curb spending and create lesser government.
No problem. The first thing is we need to get rid of the MBT, the Michigan Business Tax, and we can simply eliminate it. Now, I've heard some Republicans, they want to play a shell game with it. They want to take that away and put in another tax to make up for it. It's playing three-card Monty with the guy on the corner. You're never going to win. And that's what it doesn't matter who's behind the table, whether it's a Democrat or Republican. I don't know why, there's no reason why we can't totally eliminate this tax. And we can do that just by simply having state employees across the state cover 20% of their health care benefits, which is still underneath what private sector pays. Private sector averages around 26% of their own health care costs. So they're still not even paying what they would if they worked for a private company. And with the savings from that alone, we can totally eliminate the Michigan Business Tax. Now, that alone is going to bring business back into the state of Michigan. That one simple thing.
Hey, Larry, remember 4 years ago when you ran for SNAP? The issues really haven't changed, have they?
You know, as I'm listening to Scott and remembering, you're right, Dave, that's the scary part. We're still talking about the same things 4 years later. And Scott, I think you're on the same page that you would agree that the reason we lose so many businesses here in Michigan, I mean, people are talking about the auto industry, and certainly when you're in a one-industry town or a one-industry state, for that matter, and that industry goes down, it's going to have rippling effects across the board. But I've watched smaller businesses leave the state as well, and scratching my head because many of them were actually doing quite well, but the word I got was they didn't want to deal with the regulations. They didn't want to deal with the Michigan's tax structure. And then I've questioned, okay, well, why can't we create new businesses? What's been the problem in getting businesses to come to Michigan? And again, I hear the same thing. They don't want to deal with the mentality of our state government, the mentality of the way we do business in terms of that tax structure and the regulations that they have to deal with. Has that been your experience as well?
Yes, very much so. You know, the tax structure is one part of it, but we also have a DNR in the state of Michigan that has became, we really got to go in and analyze that agency as a whole. Their environmental quality department has really put a haywire in a lot of businesses from starting up. I mean, if you simply want to start a compost business in your backyard, you've got to apply for permits and wait for applications and jump through hoops, not only at your township level, but then you got to wait for a state permit, too. There's so many regulations that are needless. I mean, we do need to protect the environment. I'm not saying we need to go back and start dumping in our waters or anything like that, but I'm saying we need to look at what the DNR is actually doing to businesses and streamline some of it and get rid of some of the overly burdensome things that keep businesses from moving here. And I can honestly say from being around the country, I've been through all 48 states, you know, Michigan's got one of the greatest industrial powerhouse bases in the country. We've got a transportation system that's second to none. We've got waterways, we've got rail, and we've got highways. Now, they may be in disrepair in spots, don't get me wrong, but for a majority, we've got a great transportation system. When you get out here in the western states especially, you know, you can't transport things, especially heavy steel items or anything, easily. It takes a lot of effort and a lot more miles and a lot more money to move things around. And I don't see why we can't become an industrial powerhouse again. You know, but if you think about it, you know, would Caterpillar or John Deere want to come to Michigan right now and open up a plant with the tax structure and the regulations the way they are? I don't blame them for not wanting to come to Michigan and open
a plant. Absolutely not.
Right.
I don't either, Scott.
And the, you know, and the states that they are going to understand that, and that's what we're competing against. That, you know, they're looking at some sunny spot down in Mississippi or Florida or Alabama, and they're looking at the sun, they're looking at the newness of it all, and they're selling that, well, yeah, you know, I guess you could go back to that old rusty steel belt with the old rusty mentality and the old rusty values. And by the way, all those regulations that go with it. And from the business's perspective, it's, well, yeah, why would we want to relocate there when we've got all this? And, you know, perception is 99% of everything, but certainly the reality is as well that if you want to do business, you're going to have to make it viable for the business to do business with.
Exactly. And that's also the other thing, too, I'll get right into is right to work. Now, I've heard people where we are a union state, but union, it's outgrowing its day, I think, in the state of Michigan and in its place in businesses. We, right now in Michigan, unions don't work for the workers. They work for the unions. They, as long as they get their union dues, they really do not care about the workers anymore. And that's very evident in a lot of areas, not only in private sector, UAW and Teamsters, but also in the government sector. Teachers union and the firefighters and police unions, they've really gotten into this thing where they want to collect dues, and when a worker needs representation or protection, they're not there for them. And I think becoming a right-to-work state is key to making unions work again for the employee. Right now, there's no incentive for a union to work for the employee. They don't have to. If you become a right-to-work state, the union has to represent the worker, or that worker won't pay their dues anymore. And they'll probably take a lot of people with them. It's not going to eliminate unions. What it's going to do is it's going to bring the unions back in check and make them work for the workers. And I really think it's going to put a balance back into the whole union versus the company issue. And that's another key thing. Right now, the right-to-work states are the ones that are leading the unemployment. I mean, if you're a union state like Michigan is, where you're pro-union and you've got lots of pro-union regulations and laws, we're losing jobs because of it. That's another thing keeping business from moving here.
Well, you know, Scott, I think you hit the key word, balance. I think things have become so out of balance across the board, quite frankly, that we're seeing the consequence of that, that things have the scales have tipped so much into extremes, and certainly the unions and the banks and everything else where there's been money-making efforts, the things that were never intended to be business, like government, have become big business. And that's really kind of, I think we've seen the consequential effects of all of that. Would you agree?
Oh, yes, very much. And that's, you know, and I've got some other ideas, too. I mean, and one of them that I've come up with on my own, and I'm trying to put research numbers together, which is very difficult as you start to dig through government numbers. But we have, in the state of Michigan, our road commission, your county road commission. Everybody's got a county road commission. There's a lot of employees there, and there's a lot of high-wage, high-dollar jobs that are not necessarily skilled jobs. And nothing against the people that work there. They're only working for the government. I don't blame them at all. But the problem is we as taxpayers are paying for that. And that's an issue that we need to look at. I lived in Illinois for a few years, and they privately contract road services, such as maintaining roads. So they still have a road commission, you know, in an office to oversee the project. But they don't have employees, per se, and they don't have trucks and road graders. It is private industry that maintains the roads through bids and through contracts. And that's something we need to look at in the state of Michigan. If it can save us money and it's common sense, it's simple, we need to look at that. Yeah, this overrun government, you know, the more people we have on the government take, the more taxes it takes to support that. I don't care if you work for the government or if you work for private sector. If you've got a larger portion of your paycheck going out in taxes, there's less for you to spend the way you want to spend.
No question.
Well, don't be surprised if you scratch not far below the surface and find that that special interest has to do with that and a number of other issues of why we're not outsourcing services the way we should be in this state.
Yeah, and that brings up another very good issue I want to get on is the political action committees and your large contributors to politicians. Not only state reps, but you've got county commissioners and things like that even that are very financially backed by large businesses, owners, business corporations. If you go in and look at campaign finance and look at the way people vote when they're in office, it is almost a direct correlation. And that's why I am doing this differently. I'm doing it with my own money and my own funds, and I take money from no one. And that's one thing that I think is going to separate people. Eventually down the road, we're going to have to get away from funding campaign finance the way we do now. I don't know how to change it, but I know the way I'm changing it, the way I want to do it for state rep, is to not take money from anybody, because I want to represent the people. I don't want to represent the few people that put a couple thousand dollars in my campaign coffers.
Now, that was one of the initial things when I met you a couple weeks ago, Scott, that really impressed me. And I noticed that you were handing out very inexpensive information about yourself. It was getting the word out on a basic black and white piece of paper that had the right information on it. And it states right on here, I'm not accepting any donations to my campaign. It's against my beliefs, and I will spend my own funds. And I can tell you, I've been there. I've actually served in elected office. I've run for other offices. Larry's been there. He's run for office. And it really says a lot to say, I'm going to do this myself. And I know that you've been a good steward of your own money. You've been frugal. But you've gotten out the vote. It sounds like you've got a strong candidacy. So you've been at this for quite some time now, right?
Yeah, I've been campaigning on doorsteps since March, and been actively doing it. And I've probably right around 4,500 doorsteps I've been on, and either talked to people or left a piece of literature in their door handle. And, I'm just trying to get my word out and do it effectively. And, you know, I'm trying to do it in common sense. What, you know, our founding fathers didn't want people to go around and collect money, a large amount of money from a few people, and go represent that money in office. Our founding fathers would be rolling over in their graves right now if they'd seen what was happening. And and there's a lot of things that are going on that, you know, it's questionable. And, you know, if you look back at the money, and now, don't get me wrong, I'm not going after everybody that accepts money, but what I'm saying is if you look at the vote and you look at the dollars, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure it out. You can see what's happened. And I don't blame the elected politicians for that. I blame the system. You know, the elected politicians, how can you take $5,000 from somebody and not represent them? That would be pretty hard to do. You can't go vote against them. You know, how can you look that person in the face again? And if you're going to be an elected politician, you're going to try, most of them are going to try to keep doing it, and therefore they want to get another $5,000 the next time they run for office. So you can't look that person in the eye and ask for money again if you vote against them. It's the system that's broken, and that's the key of it. But to change it, we've got to make drastic changes, and that's one of the things that I'm really standing up on, is that I'm not taking money from anyone. I don't want to be bought. I want to represent the people.
Absolutely. Well, Scott, let's soften things up a little bit. Let's talk about your family life. You've got a daughter, and you're remarried now, right?
Correct.
So tell us about your relationship with your daughter.
Well, I've got my 3-year-old daughter. She turns 4 at the end of January here. So she's definitely the joy of my life. I'm an over-the-road truck driver, but currently my ex and I have come to the agreement where I am able to see her when I get home, you know, whether I'm home for 12 hours or 36 hours or however long it is, and she does it on short notice with me. She knows the nature of the job. It changes. You know, if I've got a tire that blows out or a truck that breaks down or, you know, inclement weather in the wintertime especially, you know, she knows that things are subject to change always in my career. I might be scheduled to be home on Thursday but not make it home until Saturday. And then, you know, and she's been very good. I commend her highly for that. She's been working with my, you know, irregular schedule, and it's worked out very well, I think. I get to spend a good portion of quality time with my daughter, and there's no fights and no arguments, and it's definitely changed. When we first broke up, we went through a transition period, and it was difficult, but I do commend her highly now. We've been getting along very well, and it's been benefiting Taylor the most. That's my daughter's name. And
that's a great name.
I went through friend of the court system with it all when it happened, and I had a different job circumstance. And, you know, it opened my eyes because I never, common sense is kind of left at the doorstep when you step into a friend of the court, in my opinion. And that's something I would like to work on. You know, I don't know if there's a certain bill or anything that I can think of on the top of my head where I could say this is going to change the system, because I don't think there's any one single thing that's going to change the friend of the court or a family court.
I got a bill that we can write up, blue back, and put through when you're state rep. How about we start with just a simple aspect of abolishing the friend of the court?
I have no arguments on that. Let's get the pens of flying.
The government works very slowly, especially when it comes to, and I think it was Ronald Reagan that said, the closest we will come to eternal life on this earth is a government program. You know, in other words, once you start a government program, it's nearly impossible to bring it to its finality, you know. You know, in many instances, I see the friend of the court as antiquated. In others, I see them as misinformed. And then there are additional areas where I see there as there is a specific departmental agenda. So there's a lot of facets about the FOC that take some appreciation, that's for sure. And I'm speaking from not only personal experience, but because I also, as many know, as the chairman of the Friend of the Court Citizens Advisory, a chairman of Oakland County. And I see citizens come in on a regular basis, and they have issues with the Friend of the Court on many different levels, whether, you know, parenting time or child support or the like. And most of the time, if it's a parenting time issue, I hate to say it, but Friend of the Court is unfortunately not coming to the plate in the manner that they could be for these families. And what they tend to do is more readily pay attention to child support arrearages and the like. Unfortunately, it comes right down to the payment. If, you know, a friend of the court is addressing child support issues, they're seeing a bigger stipend for that. And as time goes on and we get you into state house, Scott, we can go over some of these issues and talk about how you can effectively work these issues and, you know, and make you even a more effective public servant.
Yes, by all means. It's so disheartening to be in front of the court and get the door slammed in your face, knowing deep down that you're in the right, but yet they're telling you you're wrong. It almost makes you feel like a second-class citizen when you come out. And that's not what our court system should be doing at all. And it's wrong on many levels. And you can't sit back and say, well, it's just this one issue. If we change that, it'll all be better. There's many, many things, I think, that we need to change. But we definitely need to get the ball rolling in the right direction. And I'm all for supporting the cause of doing that in any way I can help or any way I can administer anything once I'm elected. I would be more than willing to work with you on that.
At the very least, Scott, what the direction that it needs to go in, and perhaps it may take legislation to get it to this level, is that, let's face it, they work for us. And when you go in with a friend of the court issue, unfortunately, what people are feeling is just what you described is you know, they're not listening, and the result is in many times very backwards and doesn't make a lot of sense. And there needs to be, as you pointed out, more common sense applied to government. And let's face it, friend of the court and is part of the government. You know, they're a bureaucratic department, and they're there to serve families. And if we're going to introduce any legislation, it should be that's going to assure that they are going to be more of a service-oriented organization and there to resolve issues, not add fuel to the fire.
Yep.
So,
well, the fact of the matter, Dave, is that Friend of the Court is another piece of government that is turned into a business. They're not serving families. What they're doing is trying to make the job as easy as they can for themselves because they have such a quantity of cases and they're all about collecting money and they want to bundle services. They want to bundle things up into the easiest kind of mainstream flow that they can to manage a situation. They're not interested in your individual situations and the individual need of an individual family. They want to just recommend one thing, boom, let's do it the easiest, simplest way we can for us. And that doesn't address the individual family needs. That's been my experience, my observation, and quite frankly, that concerns me. That's not an agency that's serving the needs of your family. That might be a friend of the court. It's not a friend of family.
Yeah, I agree. That's a very good way to put it. I like that thought, and I think you're right. It does. They do not represent us, the people. They've become a business entity of the government. And now that I'm sitting back hearing this, it does make sense. And it, you know, in politics, I've heard a lot of people say, if you follow the money, you follow the power. If you follow the power, you follow the money. And that's true even in front of the court. So.
No question. You follow the dollar, and you'll get to the driving force behind it.
Yep. And you know, and we need, you know, we also need to, you know, it's so hard to, you know, research judges. You know, when they come up for election, 90% of them, I don't know if I've ever seen any questionnaires put in front of them for anything. You know, you see judges with signs out all over. But other than that, they get elected to office on a sign. And they go in a few parades. I know I've seen some in parades, but I've never seen questionnaires put in front of judges. And I think that's, you know, we've got some broken communications with our media system, too. I mean, I can honestly say that as a third party. I'm getting a lot of, you know, grief trying to get equal representation through the media streams. And, I think that's something, you know, we need to look at with judges, too. And we need to give them a little bit more, you know, space in our newspapers and now with the Internet, you know, our Internet sources of news.
Well, speaking of Internet, don't you have a website that you'd like to tell our listeners about, Scott?
Yes, I do. Actually, I've got a web page. It's
LPWM, Scott.
Okay, LPW, yeah, you're right. I got this accurate. And then,
that's why I'm the producer.
So thank you for correcting me on that one. And then, I also have a Facebook page, and that you can just do a simple search on if you enter in Scott Dudak for Michigan District 32. And you even get the spelling halfway close, so it should come up with my Facebook page. And that's where I'm more active on. I post almost daily there and try to keep it fresh and updated. And I do a lot with that page. So I've got a fairly decent large following for being a state representative candidate. So.
Yeah, and that LPWM stands for what, Scott?
The Libertarian Party of West Michigan.
There you go. So again, that would be, of course, www.lpwm.org/, then Scott's name. You put Scott with two T's, D-U-D-E-K. And that is, I've been to Scott's website that is sponsored by the Libertarian Party.
And I like what you have to say, Scott.
Thank you.
It looks as though that you stand for fiscal responsibility and for lessening government, lowering the tax burden on citizens. And, of course, you're a shared parenting, co-parenting minded kind of guy. So we can certainly resonate with that on this program, because here on Best Interest of the Family, we're about education. We're about court reform and everything that has to go along with that as it pertains to family matters, friend of the court, DHS, CPS. And of course, we are about the fact that children need both parents. They desire both parents in their lives. They desire, that interaction on a regular basis, not just a visitor in the lives of, of them. And certainly they desire proper guidance. You know, children, and Larry, you can speak to this as the parent coach, but, do children want to just be left to their own recourse, Larry?
No, they might think so initially, but, no, quite frankly, it leaves them, quite anxious and, feeling quite abandoned. And no, by no means, they want a parent to be a parent.
I totally agree with that, and it's. I think there might be a few 15-year-olds that disagree with you on a few days with that statement, but other than that, I can agree with that. And and the thing of it is too, it's the best interest of the family is to lower taxes and have less government. So take that out of the picture either. I mean, who wouldn't like to have a few extra dollars in their pocket to do with as they wish? Right now we're being told how those dollars are going to be spent for us by a few individuals elected into office. And that's not where our direction of government should be going. And that's part of my 3-year-old daughter too. There was a time in this country when growing up as a kid, you looked up to politicians as a respectable job. It was almost like a matter of rank if you were an elected official. You looked at it like you were a little bit better than everybody else. Now, I don't know of any politicians that would look upon themselves as they're better than anybody else. I think there's a lot of them that it's the other way around. And that's what, there's no honor and integrity left in politics, is because no matter what they say when they're out there campaigning, when it all comes said and done, it comes back to the money. And that's my key thing I'm running on. I want to change it.
Now, Scott, over the last couple of state rep terms, there's been a lot of talk, and there's even been some legislation loosely introduced about taking the state reps and senators down to a part-time position to save taxpayer dollars. Now, tell us about what would your idea be behind that? Would you support a part-time legislation, and would you support cutting the wages? I mean, of your own wages, say you get into state house?
Oh, by all means. Michigan's only one of the few states. I think there's 7 states that have a bicameral house, meaning we have state representatives and state senators. And we're only one of 4 states with full-time state legislature. Now, if you look at the other 3 states, they're in about as bad a financial shape as we are, which in my mind relates that the more time they have to spend in Lansing, the more time they have to make more bills and bigger government. And that's exactly where the direction we don't need to be in. I totally support a part-time legislature. And I also support us going to a unicameral house, which means one house. So we would have state delegates, not state representatives and state senators. Right now there's so many races in a district, people don't know who they're voting for. You've got state representatives, you've got state senators, you've got a governor, you've got a lieutenant governor, secretary, the list goes on before you even get to the national election, with your U.S. representatives and U.S. senators. I mean, it's overwhelming to actually look through the information. I think if we downsized it and made a few less positions in a state level, people would be more willing to look at information and pick better candidates to go to represent them.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'd like to see a fresh state rep look to is getting some of these antiquated laws off the books you know, there seems to be such a rush to when you're a state rep, you know, because it's such a small pocket of time. You can only do two terms, right? And
correct.
And many times what I see is a big rush to get their name out there by introducing some powerhouse legislation. And usually it's very subjective, and it's usually got special written all over it. And what I like to see is somebody go in there and shake up things by looking at some of the laws that we've had on the books for decades that are enmeshed and cross-hatched in with the current laws that we have that are doing nothing but causing trouble for interpretation. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I know what you're saying. And a lot of that, too, it comes back to tax incentives. You know, and that's something I'm totally against. It sounds horrible at first, but if you think about it, a tax incentive, that means somebody in government is picking who gets to pay the tax and who doesn't. That is not fair and not right and not what our founding fathers had in mind at all. I'm sorry, but tax incentives and abatements and these rebate programs, they need to stop, they need to end now. It's not fair. If you have a startup business and you don't get a tax incentive, but the company that's already in business has a tax incentive, that makes it unfair to you. Even though you might be able to produce the same product at a better price, because of the tax incentive, you can't. And that's wrong. And it forces people in and out of business, and government should not be picking who wins and who loses in the private sector. They need to keep their hands out of it. And we've got a really good stance of that in Michigan with a long history of that with the automotive industry. If you look at startup automotive companies, every time one has come along, it's amazing how they've got pushed out. If you look at Tucker, DeLorean, and just recently with Penske wanting to buy Saturn, you know, that all got washed underneath the table. Anytime somebody wants to compete against them, it's the same, they wash them out. And that's government picking winners and losers. And the end result is us as people suffer because we pay more for products that are less of a product. You know, maybe somebody else has a better idea to make a better product for a lower price, but we never see it as people because the government chose to pick winners and losers for it. And
Right. That's
wrong. And that's something that, you know, they're like, oh, you're going to raise taxes. No, I'm not raising taxes. I'm just going to make everybody pay the same. it's plain and simple, you know.
Would you support getting rid of an income tax and going to a sales tax instead?
I would totally support that. Totally support it. And the reason being is it would encourage people to save money, not only for their retirement, but for rainy day funds, because you don't pay any tax on your money, and you can make as much money as you want. You don't pay a tax on the money until you spend it. And that's a very good principle because it would encourage people to be more saving and more thrift-wise. And right now we've had a runaway economy. I mean, with the housing market, just here recently, you know, it was because people bought homes they couldn't afford. And that's a good instance of where something like that may discourage people from doing things like that down the road. I would want some reassurance where there would be no income tax ever. It would strictly stay as a sales tax base.
Mm-hmm.
And because odds are in politics, somebody would find a way to bring back an income tax later on, and that would totally put it under the foot of what you've just accomplished. So.
Sure. So you'd have to put some assurances in that legislation.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
So, you know, the average sales tax, if I go out and, if I buy a TV set, it's going to be 6%. Would you keep the sales tax at the same level, or would you increase it by a couple of cents?
Well, what would happen is you would pay no state income tax, but I'd also like to be pushed at a federal level at the same time, is to get rid of where you pay no income tax. It would totally eliminate the whole IRS department because all they'd be doing is collecting sales tax, which they already do through a state level everywhere, with the exception of a couple states. And what you would do is you would gain back it would get rid of a government bureaucracy. Plus, it would don't get me wrong, we would have to issue cards where people would have, let's say, $15,000 per year per person, you know, over the age of 18, you know, where you could buy the, you know, $15,000 tax-free. So lower-income families could buy groceries and not be taxed at that, to speak of. But after that $15,000 for everybody, they would become, you know, I've seen numbers where it's 12%, and some say 18%, but, you know, let's say a 15% sales tax across the board. But you got to remember, there would be no income tax at
right.
a state or federal level.
And you decide what you're going to spend your hard-earned money on, and you know how much tax you're going to pay going, you know, out the door.
Right, right. If you're going to go buy a $10,000 boat, you know it's going to cost you $11,500, roughly.
Right.
So you know you got to have $1,500 extra to throw to the tax man. Whereas right now, you know, we're paying, if you make $10,000, you've already paid $1,000 in tax, plus you're still paying a sales tax when you go buy the boat.
Well, let me ask you this, though, Scott. If you're going to use that boat, say, for commercial fishing, it's going to be a business boat, okay? Would you still get tax benefit?
I think businesses should have, a certain percentage of their last year's taxes. You know, if they, let's say you have a company that did $500,000 worth of business last year, maybe you get a card for the following year where you can buy $50,000 worth of product tax-free. You know, make it a basis where it's on last year's, whatever your sales tax was that you paid last year, you get a percentage of that back on a card for the following year. So it would encourage people to expand their business because they would still be getting a portion of that back the following year, but at the same point, they're not getting out of it tax-free either. So any business is still going to be taxed. It's just not going to be taxed. You know, and there'd be some numbers to play around with on that, you know, on a percentage basis, but I'm sure, you know, and, you know, I grew up on the farm, and there's nothing really more regulated from the government standpoint than farming. And I probably would still be in agriculture, especially farming, right now if government wasn't in it. The problem is government tries to control everything, and therefore they've pretty much pushed me out. You know, they control prices. Every time you try to get ahead, they push you backwards. And they do that by, you know, through withholding grain on the market and dump it when prices go high. And at
right.
the same time, when prices get a little bit too low, they buy it and put it in bins to store it. So there's never an opportunity to, you know, capitalize on anything and really get ahead.
Well, I thought it was kind of humorous about our conversation earlier today, Scott, was that you said that you literally dealt in pigs. And I'm thinking to myself, well, you know, if you go to the state house, you know, you'll be in familiar territory. You'll be dealing with a few pigs up there.
I said that. You know, it's kind of like at the farm, you know, when the feeders run dry, the pigs squeal. And that's exactly what I want to do to Lansing. I want to make them squeal. We got to cut spending, you know, and that's the key. And there's going to be some people that squeal. I mean, and not
right.
everybody in District 32 or in the state of Michigan is going to be happy with me. I understand that.
You know, there's
a lot of people that work for the government, and they may take a pay cut or a job loss. And unfortunately, if that's what we need to do to move ahead of the state and benefit everyone in the end, I think that's what we need to do. And, you know, there may be a few people that cry now, but it's going to eliminate a whole lot of people from crying later on.
Well, you know, if you run into these folks that just want to put lipstick on a pig, you know, and you're just trying to do the right thing, you know, it's okay, Scott. It sounds like you're a guy of personal conviction, and you've got a plan, and you want to carry it out. And in order to carry that out, you got to get the vote out, and it sounds like you're working real hard.
As much as I can, I'm home. I grab my daughter and put her in the stroller and go knock on doors, you know.
There you go.
It's a hard balance to, you know. I never realized getting involved in this, how much time it would actually require to run for public office. And I hear people say, oh, politicians, you guys don't do anything. I'm like, you guys, nobody in the average public, myself included, really knows what a politician does until you do it. I'm only at the entry level of it, and I've already, I can't count the hours that I've even put into this already, and it's work. It's constant work. You're always trying to work ahead to try to, be one up and be in front of everybody, and it's a difficult thing. It is.
Well, I can see that you've got a great amount of dedication already, and Larry and I, we really wish that we're coming to the end of our program tonight, but we want to give you an opportunity to take a couple minutes, Scott, to have it up close and personal with our listeners and just kind of get the message out there. What's your final word to our listeners tonight?
Well, final words to the listeners is, if you live in District 32 or you know anybody that lives there, to spread the word that I'm the candidate for the job. I've got a Republican and a Democrat running against me, and, they're not being real public. I mean, they've actually avoided a lot of public speaking events. They both declined to debate me during a recent festival, and all three of us are actually from the same hometown. And our festival was in town and with a big parade and everything, and I figured it'd be a great time to have a debate. And I got zero response from either candidate. So, if they're that afraid to debate me in public or they think I'm not that much of a threat, I don't know. But I know what I'm doing, and that's getting my message out to the people and let them decide. And I want to have a fair shot in November, and I think I do. I think I've got the best message, and I've got a plan laid out. I know what I want to do. I want to go to Lansing and cut spending and cut our government and get our state running back the direction we need to go.
Well, I'll tell you what, Scott. I don't know if you're perceived as a threat, but I certainly can say that you are a force to reckon with. And we've certainly appreciated, having you on the show tonight. You've added a lot of value to our broadcast, and we've really really appreciate getting to know you tonight.
Oh, well, thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity, and I appreciate everything you do with Dads and Moms in Michigan and having the seminars. I attended one there last weekend, and it's a great thing that you guys do, and I totally commend you both for doing it. It's, if I'd known half of what I knew going into my situation, things would have been a lot different, I think. But, it's a great thing all the way around, everything you guys are doing. Keep up the great work.
Well, thank you. Well,
thanks,
and speaking for Larry, too, I know that it's because of, like yourself, and you're very passionate about, about serving as state rep, in your district, in District 32 in the state of Michigan. We're passionate, about our kids, and that passion spills over to our community, and again, it comes down to best interest of the family radio is primarily about education, and that education, stems around that, and I know, this is our mantra: children need both parents. So, until society embraces completely the aspect that whether you're in a married and separated, divorced, or out of wedlock situation, or even an adoption, within a marriage or what have you, and the situation turns out that you're in separate households, the most important factor is that children need and desire to have a continued loving and enriching relationship with both mom and with dad. Isn't that right, Larry Heron, the parent coach?
I couldn't have said it better.
Oh, I
you're absolutely
you
correct.
But you're just being kind, since I'm a kid from Indiana.
Well,
but,
even in Indiana, you get it right sometimes, But
that's
no,
right.
Dave, you summed it up well. That kids need and they're wired to need, and they want kids. We don't give them enough credit at every age. Children are pretty sharp. They come to understand what a parent's role is supposed to be. And they don't, when it doesn't feel right, it doesn't feel right. You're going to create an anxious kid when you leave a void in their life, or when you start to badmouth the other parent, or you start to create tensions between, in that dynamic. And in those dynamics, children then feel tension, and they start to get anxious. They start to develop anxiety. You're stressing them out. And quite frankly, good parenting doesn't do that. Good parenting swallows your pride, resolves your issues, and it doesn't allow your issues to become the issues of your children. And that includes your issues with their other parent. That's just not good parenting. I don't care what that other parent's been as a spouse. You don't allow a relationship with your children to be contagious with that other parent. You just don't let it happen. Now, if your other parent is a knucklehead and they're doing it on their own, then, you know, that's a whole other story. But, again, it's not jumping on the bandwagon to create problems for them. And it's leaving windows of opportunity open for them, in fact, to recover and to be something that their children need them to be. Dave, I can't tell you how many people just these last couple of weeks I've basically said it to them, and they said, you know, I get that. I understand that. Thanks. That's just putting it in the basic terms when I say, be something your kids can love and understand. That's the bottom line. That's all a child really wants with any parent in any parent relationship, is to have a parent they can love and understand. May not always like you. I mean, you know, you're going to do things that they don't like.
That's the job of a parent, man.
That's part of the deal, man. That's part of the territory. But be something they can love and understand. And when I say understand, I mean, again, sometimes things get a little complex and they don't understand it, but they understand you as a parent who is going to be there for them, who's going to stay consistent, who stands for something that they can understand. And when that's the deal, you know, kids will gravitate to you and they'll get through it.
Absolutely, brother. Well, I'll tell you what, we have exhausted our broadcast for tonight. Again, thanks to State Rep candidate Scott Dudek for coming on the show tonight, Libertarian candidate for State Rep in District 32 in Michigan. And thanks to all of our loyal listeners and those that come on live and those that download our program. And Larry and I will continue to be here, you know, Lord willing, and the creek don't rise. And, you know, we just encourage you to continue to love your kids and to be a constant, loving and enriching, aspect in their lives. Do what you got to do to create that and carve out that that needed time that your children need you, regardless of your current situation. If you're fighting to remain a constant influence in your child's life, you know, and you're running into roadblocks through a court system or a bitter ex, you know, we want to continue to encourage you in that aspect and let you know that there are others like you out here. There's myself, there's Larry, there's those that we have on the show, there's listeners that certainly can appreciate what you're going through. And we want to let you know that you're your child's best advocate. So never give up on your kids. You know, not that you would naturally, but sometimes I run into folks that are really downtrodden, and you know, they feel like that they're at the end of their rope. And you know what? You know, many times they found that they can hang on to the end of that with their teeth and whatever other you know, things that they can muster up, and eventually they find the fortitude to come back.
And Dave, just one more
sure.
Time, let's remind the folks that if you're running into roadblocks and challenges and trying to stay consistent in your child's life because somebody's blocking you out of it, that's an opportunity again. Come to Dads and Moms of Michigan and learn what your legal rights really are. Just because you know, it's happening doesn't mean that it's legal. And not every judge respects the law. We know most do, but there's some that don't. There's some that that use laws in the wrong way. And that's where having a good attorney who can help you understand your rights and advocate for your rights, fight for your rights, so that you do, in fact, have authority in your child's life. And this seminar coming up in October, again, Dads and Moms of Michigan. What was that date again, Dave?
October the 3rd.
October the 3rd at the Waterford Eagles.
It might be October the 2nd. It's whatever.
I thought it was October the 2nd. That's right.
Okay.
I don't have a calendar in front of me. But
I don't have the website right in front of me. In fact, I believe that I may have switched the page, but I believe it's October the 2nd, 10 until noon
at the Waterford Eagles Club. And, of course, you can go to dadsandmomsofmichigan.org, and that information is right on the front page.
And you will be educated in what your legal rights as a parent is. And if they're being violated, how to go about getting those rights met. Very, very important.
Well, and it's a great place to network with other parents that are either embarking on, the court system. It might be new to them, and so they're learning to navigate, which is a really huge benefit if you're early on in the process. Or you may be several years into it, and you may find that you've got a lot of questions or concerns, and maybe you haven't quite understood the processes, and this is a good way to get up to speed, folks, and to network with some folks that have been there, have been successful in many different areas of, establishing parenting time or affecting, other areas of their judgments or their orders. And again, as Larry pointed out, you can get some advice, straight, free advice directly from a family law attorney. And many times you can learn through the networking about how to find areas of the law yourself so that you can understand, what a parenting time order is supposed to look like, or what the law says in the Child Custody Act about parenting time, or what the Friends of Court handbook looks like, or other aspects of the law that govern the friend of the court. And if you don't know these things, how can you possibly navigate through them? So again, we encourage you to come out to the Dads and Moms of Michigan meeting on October the 2nd, and again, go to the website and find out additional information. And of course, again, that's free. So, it doesn't get any better than that, does it, Larry?
Boy, that's the right price in this economy.
Absolutely. And, we're gonna wind things up tonight, Larry. And, good broadcast. Always appreciate, being along and being the parent coach on our program. You add a lot of value as well to the broadcast. And, we'll all get together again next Tuesday.
You got it. Look forward to it. Good night, everybody.